Hello, faithful listeners to the Bites of Insight podcast. You probably don't recognize my voice since I am standing in for my colleague, Winnie Secor, who the normal host of this program. Today, I am joined by Cameron Salore and Jenna Rooney. I'll get a little bit into their background as we dive further in. But today's topic is going to be data mining asked and answered. So Bites of Insight, for those of you who are new listeners, is a podcast from Arete where cybersecurity meets real-world impact. Again, my name is Lynn Peachy. I'm the Regional Sales Vice President of Insurance at Arete. And whether you're a security or insurance professional, a business leader, or simply curious about the future of digital defense, there's something here for you. So let's get into today's episode. Cameron Salore, he joins us from Orange County. We've got some good coast-to-coast coverage here today. So Cameron is in the Orange County office of Lewis Brisbois, as well as being the co-chair of data privacy and cybersecurity for the firm. Jenna Rooney in Chicago, covering the Midwest area. She is Arete's director of client services. And then myself, I join you all from New York. So we have a full coast-to-coast coverage here today. Cameron, let's start with you. A little bit about you. What's your background, your role at Lewis Brisbois? Why should we trust you as an expert here?
Well, thank you so much, Lynn, for the opportunity to be on this podcast. I am a big fan, as you know, and it's a topic near and dear to my heart, data mining is. But before I talk about my love for data mining, I'll talk a little bit about my qualifications. As you mentioned, Lynn, I'm a data privacy and cybersecurity attorney here at Lewis Brisbois. I'm a co-chair of the group, and I specialize my practice in helping organizations respond to all types of data security events. And as you all know, a part of many of those events, there's a process of data mining that some people loathe and some people love. And I'm happy to call myself a member of that latter category. You know, to me, data mining is something that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around it. And it seems like every day you have a new data mining company that's popping up, and a lot of them will come and, you know, wine and dine you, and they'll almost love bomb you by, you know, sending you to events and promising you all of this new AI technology. And it can get a little bit overwhelming in terms of who does what and what really needs to be done. And so I'm really happy to be a part of this experiment here to really talk about the ins and outs of data mining, and especially with an expert like Jenna, as far as, you know, what we really need to think about and talk about, both from a data mining side as well as from the breach coach side. So I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Cameron. And Jenna, if you could lightly introduce yourself as well, and then sort of give us a little bit of an intro as to how did cybersecurity and data mining intersect, and why do we find ourselves at the crucial spot that we are today, where it has become such a necessary service to both the incident response process and then from the insurance process as well?
Sure. So Jenna Rooney, I've been in the e-discovery and cybersecurity industry for almost 15 years, which is kind of crazy to think about. I've worked more in the traditional e-discovery side for the first part of my career, and spent some time both on the e-discovery vendor side and also working at software companies such as Relativity. And I've been with Arete now for a little over 4.5 years and the director of client services. The bulk of that time here has been spent working with our data breach analysis team, who is our team that's focused solely on data mining and document review for data breach matters. And to answer your question, Lynn, in terms of, you know, why is data mining important? How does it fit into the incident response process? So looking at data over the last, you know, even 15 years, electronic data has grown significantly. And with that has come more data breaches that are taking place. And a core part of closing out and wrapping up recovery from an incident is being able to notify individuals that may have been impacted by a breach. And a lot of these notifications, and I'll let the true expert on the legal side speak to it, but is driven by regulatory requirements and the need to notify individuals that they may have been impacted by a breach. And so as data continues to grow, the number of individuals that may be impacted in a breach continues to grow, and the process continues to evolve and to meet those needs of growing data. As I mentioned before, I'll let Cam kind of dive more into the regulatory drivers behind it.
Yeah, thanks, Jenna. I was going to say, Cam, Can you kind of set the stage for us as to when these data breach notification statutes really started to, you know, for lack of a better word or phrase, you know, get some legs to them? Like, when did this start becoming such a concern that people had to worry about, you know, potential lawsuits, fines, things like that? Take us through that.
Happily, the first data breach statute, I believe, was in 2002. And obviously now, you know, all 50 states and four territories have data breach notification statutes. But as you can imagine, in 2002, there really wasn't an overarching need or demand for such statutes in the sense that, to Jenna's point, right, data proliferation has really happened a lot more in the last 10 years or 15 years or so. Going back 23 years, this was, you know, before that iPhone. And, you know, some people had Blackberries, you know, attached to their hip, but most people were not emailing and texting and posting on social media because, frankly, a lot of those entities didn't exist in 2002. And so really, as, you know, the years have gone by, you know, let's say starting 2010, 2015, you're starting to see a lot more use of these data breach notification statutes. And what I mean by use is you're just seeing a lot more individuals getting notification. And that's really for a couple of reasons. One, more and more people are using electronic means of communication, but also fewer people really delete any information. So as each year goes by, you have more and more data that can be at risk of being exposed. And so, you know, last year, or I guess in 2023, there were about 419 million notices that went out. In 2024, that number was 1.7 billion notices that went out. So you can see that's just a big jump just from a one-year span. Now, of course, a lot of that depends on the types of breaches that have occurred. But in general, the less likely you are to delete that data, that just creates a ripe scenario for a large number of notices. And as many of us in this industry are aware, the more people that receive notification, the more likely that organization that sent out the notices is going to get sued for a, you know, under a class action data breach notice, which is really one of the reasons why I think data mining is a very important piece of the breach response process and an often overlooked piece. Because if you, you know, work with somebody like Jenna at an early stage, you can really hone the data mining process, make it fluid, make it time sensitive, make it efficient, and ultimately try your best to reduce that size of notification population, because that's obviously a main driver, not only in your costs for the breach itself, but in litigation costs downstream also.
Thanks, Kim. And so we're getting the impression, we get the idea that this is a continuously growing source of both cost and need from the client side. A lot of that probably driving what you referenced earlier, a sort of flooding the market of vendors in this space. And I think that's one of the things that makes it really difficult, for example, for clients, insurance carriers looking at quotes, let's call them, so quotes for the data mining services, makes them really hard to distinguish what's what. Jenna, can you kind of talk about some of the different technologies that you've seen companies trying to use, maybe some of the challenges with, you know, AI at this early phase, and then also some things that clients and, you know, potential other listeners can look for when they're trying to compare these quotes for services from data mining vendors?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, the technology has certainly evolved over the years. When you think back to what Cameron was saying about the first regulations coming around in 2002, just to give a baseline for the industry, anyone who is familiar with data mining has probably heard of tools such as Relativity and other traditional e-discovery tools. And when data mining really started to ramp up in you know, around 2015 and even more so around 2020, a lot of teams were still using traditional e-discovery platforms to conduct data mining review. And while those platforms are great for litigation review, they weren't designed for data mining. And while there's a lot of overlap in traditional document review and data mining in terms of general workflow, the outcome and the actions that you're taking during a review are very different. And they do require different types of technology to tackle that. And so it's really important that when you're looking at the technology that's being leveraged, that it's designed for data mining, and that they're, you know, the team has a strong skill set in data mining. Because the reviews are so different, there's different skill sets that are needed from not only the review team, but even from a technical perspective. One thing I've found, that there's a lot of talk out there of, you know, this technology is going to do the trick, and or AI will handle everything that we need. And while the technology has certainly improved and gotten far better, and we actually at Arete even have a purpose-built platform called 4IG that we leverage it for our review, but we also have a full stack that is specifically focused on data mining review and working through that process. Also, when it comes to AI, you have to look at it with a pretty deep lens. There's a couple of areas to focus on with it. Number one is AI is, it's still a newer thing. It continues to develop rapidly, and we do see quick improvements to AI and how it is identifying sensitive information within documents. However, there's still a core need for human interaction. And so I think it's really important to not look at AI as being, you know, the end all be all. I'm sure that in the future that technology will continue to develop, but as it is today, AI is certainly useful, but there's still a heavy element of human interaction with the data that's required to maintain defensibility. We leverage AI really to drive efficiency and for quality control purposes, but we still have a core human element to make sure that we maintain that defensibility and check the work of the AI. The other thing to think about from the AI perspective is ensuring that the data that is being reviewed as part of the breach is not being used to train further AI models. When we talk about AI, there's many different types of AI. There's generative AI, there's, you know, machine learning, there's different types. And so ensuring that if you are using a vendor that is leveraging AI, understanding what happens to that data is really important and something that should really be understood before moving forward with someone that is leveraging AI.
It sounds like there's lots of due diligence questions that need to be asked, you know, really at the outset. And unfortunately, a lot of clients might not be in that headspace coming out of an incident. So that's when, you know, someone like Cameron and Lewis Brisbois are really trying to keep clients engaged, right? And get them to pay attention to this, because it can cause problems down the line when you're talking about a potential over-notification of a population and therefore increased litigation costs, potential increased settlement costs, things of that nature. Jenna, going to also ask you just kind of quickly, any other things that clients, insurance carriers, other types of professionals should be aware of in terms of looking at these quotes that they might get from, not only from the technology process, but anything that might jump out on the page, quick hits that we should say, hey, we might be getting this quote at this price, but because they're doing it this way, we can actually expect a huge uplift in costs once we get down into it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there's a handful of things that really stick out to me initially. And number one is, this is a core challenge, especially on the insurance carrier side, but even Cam, for you and other breach coaches, to bring in quotes from multiple vendors and then try to break it down apples to apples. And so I'll do my best to give some tidbits here. One of the first things to look for is, when you're analyzing a quote, does the quote include all of the expected charges? That's the first thing that I think is really important. Is that included in the total and in the estimate? A lot of times, you know, there may be an indicator of, here's just an example, maybe project management time is billed at X number of dollars an hour, and it may cover things such as X, Y, and Z. There's no estimate for it laid out in the quote and in the total estimated budget. That's one core thing to look for. Another thing, some vendors, you know, will charge for data hosting, and you might see 1 month of data hosting included in the budget. And oftentimes, in most cases, a data mining project will, that data will be hosted for more than a single month. And so breaking the quote down to ensure that it includes everything that is outlined in the quote and that it's present in the total budget. The other things to look for are things like hourly rates, where there may be a need for an uplift on those. Low hit percentages. So for example, you know, if you've got less than 10% of the overall document pool requiring review, that would be a flag. Or if it's lower than the other quotes significantly that you've received, that would be a red flag. Sometimes there may be drivers behind that, but if you see a quote that's kind of wildly sticking out, that might be something to look into. And then the other big piece is what I mentioned earlier, is really just making sure that that budget accounts for everything and that there aren't surprises. Even things that may be unknown, even listing that there is a charge for those is important. So, for example, things like maybe database files or certain file types that aren't always present in a data set, but could be, even just an indicator that those may be present and, you know, this would be a price point for them, I think is something to look at. And really what that will do is help to make sure that you've got the full picture and really a true understanding. Nobody wants to be surprised in that way. No one likes sticker shock surprises. So ensuring that, you know, when you're looking at quotes, that there's as much information there as possible being factored into it, so you can really make that decision.
Awesome. Thanks. And Cameron, from your perspective, since you see so many of these quotes coming through your door and you're trying to help counsel clients as to which is the, you know, quote unquote, better solution for them, any kind of tips or tricks from your perspective for the listeners when they're trying to evaluate these quotes, or any horror stories that stories that you can sort of, allude to kind of help with the cautionary tale that Jenna is helping to weave?
Yeah, I think two things come to mind. I think Jenna covered a lot of the great, you know, categories of information to look for, especially with the hosting fees. I've seen a lot of organizations where the initial, you know, it might be the first month is free, the second, third month is a pretty nominal charge, and then month four, it rises exponentially. And, you know, those ones are always a little bit, you know, cause for concern, because you hope the data mining process goes relatively quickly and you're not going to need that fourth month of hosting, but it's something that's completely out of our hands. And so when I see a very high jump in a data hosting charge, that is usually a situation where I'm going to pause and really evaluate, you know, how big this project is, and almost always assume that it's going to take 4 months, because I'm going to assume the organization wants to take advantage of those higher hosting fees. The other thing that I recommend, and I use this often, is I sort of know some companies just have higher prices, and I'm not sure exactly why that is. I haven't dissected, you know, all the statements of work next to each other, but I know some organizations just have some very seemingly cost prohibitive pricing. And so I always like to get one of those quotes as well when I'm doing, especially on a bigger project, because I want to really kind of get a full lens and really get an idea. I know this company is always, you know, 20, 30% higher, but are the other companies that I'm using, or how close are they to this one higher company? So I'll use a certain company as almost as the high watermark. It'll help me really evaluate, you know, the two other companies, which ones are, you know, how close are they to each other? And how far away are they from that high water mark? So I like to do that as well, but really only on the bigger projects.
Yeah, good advice. So I know we're getting close on time. I'd love to leave our listeners with sort of the future, right? So Jenna, what do we think is kind of the future of data mining in this space? And then Cam, kind of pivot to you on your final thoughts of things to watch for in the legal space, particularly as it relates to data mining, notification, data breach class action, things to leave our listeners pondering or at least being curious about as we move into the future.
Yeah, so I think the big thing we kind of touched on earlier, but I'll bring the two together. So Cam and I both talked about growing data, growing electronic data sizes, and that's not going to go away. I read a stat the other day. I think if you took all the data that we have today and put it in traditional paper and stacked it up, it would reach billions of miles. And so I think a billion pages of normal, you know, sheet paper is 80 miles, if that gives you just a sense of how much data there is. And so when we look at traditional document review and how things happened historically in the past, where some piece of technology, but it was mostly human review and manually done. And today we've shifted into this kind of hybrid where there's still a great deal of human touch as part of the review, but there's a lot of technology being leveraged. And at Arete, I mentioned, you know, we're using a purpose-built stack, and I think we're going to see more technology shifting specifically for this type of work and less of people trying to fit data mining reviews into traditional document review platforms. And with that and the growing data sizes and our ability to keep up with that, AI and the continued evolvement of that is, or evolution of AI is also going to start to play a bigger role I see in the future in the data mining process. And really, so that we can keep up with the growing data, there will probably come a point, if we keep growing at the rate we are, where fully human review would be possible. So I'm interested to see how things continue to evolve and excited to be a part of it. I, like Cam, nerd out over data mining. So it's very exciting stuff.
I agree a lot with what you have to say, Jenna. I hope, as far as, you know, emerging trends, one trend would be more a broader adoption of data minimization. I'm not optimistic that that's going to happen, but that would be something that I could see more and more organizations at least start to consider, given in part because of the sheer volume of data that companies have, but also with the, you know, peak, I think, in data breach class actions. I'm hopeful more and more companies will at least start to consider and look into minimizing certain data. What I think is more likely to happen is companies are going to sort of almost kind of franchise out their data, meaning they're going to put, you know, HR data, they're going to rely on, you know, well-known HR companies to handle the data, or payroll data, they're going to use certain companies to house that type of data, which on the surface will help in a data breach situation for an organization, because if they don't have HR data in-house, then, you know, that's a large subset of individuals that will likely not need notification. The flip side of that, of course, is if a third-party HR provider does get compromised, then you will see, you know, likely a notification involving, you know, hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of individuals. So I could definitely see some larger breaches in terms of notification numbers happening in the near future. And then really the last thing, I think, given the rise in data breach class actions, I can see, and I certainly, this is something I'm trying to implement more and more in my practice, is having the data mining, you know, sort of component of the breach response come up a little bit sooner in the process. It's often, you know, after the forensic investigation, that's often a time where we'll start to talk about data mining, and it's almost like an afterthought in some scenarios. But I think having the data mining team involved, asking particular questions, getting the organization thinking about this at an earlier stage, I think will go a long way in terms of trying to reduce defensible way the total population of documents, and thereby reducing the notification size, and hopefully thereby reducing the likelihood of a data breach class action. So I definitely think having Jenna and team involved more and more and sooner in the incident response process is something that I foresee happening.
I was just thinking, you know, you touched on reducing the size, right? And I think getting into this conversation earlier in the process rather than later, and it really kind of hit on something for me where, you know, it's really important to work with a team that has deep knowledge of data mining and understands, based on different industries, there's different things that clients may have that play into the data mining process. For example, a healthcare provider utilizing either a patient ID or an MRN number, a medical record number, or something similar can really help with reducing that population when it comes time for data roll-up and data reduction. And so utilizing a partner that has deep knowledge in this process is really important. And Cam, you know, to that point, to minimize costs downstream and to minimize costs even, you know, with the notification process, to try to reduce sending a letter to the same person, things like that. And working with someone who has deep knowledge and has flexibility in how they're deduplicating or reducing lists to eliminate, you know, duplicative entries of maybe the same person is really important. And you made a good point there. And I just wanted to hit on that a little further.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the conversation and to no one's surprise, especially in the incident response space and dealing with cybersecurity incidents, education still remains, a big gap that needs to be kind of bridged between the experts, you know, practitioners, both legal, DFIR, data mining, all of these stakeholders and pieces of the process need to come together in order to really inform clients and help them maintain that cyber resilience. And if not resilience, then a good and thorough response. So thanks so much, Cameron and Jenna, for sharing your time today and expertise. Thank you, listeners, for tuning into Bites of Insight. If you found today's episode valuable, be sure to follow us on Spotify for more expert insights and actionable advice. For more on Arete's solution and our mission to create a world free from cybercrime, please visit us at areteir.com. If you'd like to connect or have questions, contact our marketing team at marketing@areteir.com. In the unfortunate event that you suffer an incident but need an expert to assist you, please contact us. Any active cyber incidents at Arete 911@areteir.com. Until next time,